Legislator Litz, could you lead us?
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can I have approval of the April 2nd, 2024 meeting minutes?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes. Legislator Nolan? Minutes approved.
Do you want to do a roll call?
Yeah.
Yes. And this is the roll call. Please call the roll.
Chair Jewett?
Here.
Legislator Walz? Legislator Donaldson?
Here.
Legislator Green?
Here.
Legislator Litz?
Here.
Legislator Nolan?
Here.
And Legislator Stewart, and he'll be a little late.
Yeah, Legislator Stewart will be right here. All right, resolutions for this legislative session. FYI, resolution number 208 was withdrawn by the sponsors, Legislator Gavaris and Roberts. So resolution 225, providing ARPA funding for county government services and replenishing funding for capital project number 629, the Ulster County Brownfields Program, ARP Division, Department of Finance, Division of Recovery and Resilience.
I'll move it for adoption.
For adoption?
No.
There is an amendment. This resolution...
We have to do the amendment.
Yes.
You're right.
Motion to amend.
Thank you. You all have the resolution in front of you with the changes. Do I have a motion to amend the resolution as presented?
So moved.
I'll second.
Legislator Donaldson? Discussion on the amendments?
Sure.
Yep.
We are turning back the ARPA money and funding this through a transfer from the general fund. I'd like an explanation on that.
Great. Nate, would you like to address that? Nate, from the ARPA department?
Yeah, so the major thing coming from U.S. Treasury is that there is a deadline to obligate ARPA funds by end of the year. So when it comes to, and I believe with this resolution 225, we're looking at brownfields. So the approximately $500,000 of brownfield funds will not be obligated according to U.S. Treasury's definition of that word by the end of the year. So what we are looking to do so that we don't lose the money is move that amount of funding back to the county so the county can use it for a eligible use of government service, and then a savings is made for the county and the county will refund the project.
Excuse me, Nate, let the record show that Legislator Stewart has arrived.
So what you're telling me is the money is not being lost. We're shifting it into somewhere else in the county so we can use it on some other program, and shifting county money to complete the brownfield work.
Yep.
Sounds like a shell game.
Sounds like typical end of year accounting. When you have funds left over in one line and you have funds not used or that you need in another line, you move one to the other and you say, oh, our original perception of where we were going to receive this funding isn't where we're actually receiving it. So you make reality match reality.
Agreed. It's just that there's a lot of brownfields out there we could be using money for. It's just, I don't know, we've been sleeping on the money.
Legislator Green?
Yeah, I want to know how this plays out in terms of climate change. For example, are there any plans to put solar panels on those brownfields? It is a lot of money, and it is a lot of moving it around, and it's not the end of the year. So I read this and I do understand what you're doing, not sure I understand why, but my concern is whether or not there's going to be any benefit to the climate crisis as a result of this, or is it just moving money?
So in terms of the Brownfield Resolution and the Brownfield Program, that is a program to investigate what we suspect might be environmentally contaminated properties. We want to continue to do that, especially because these are foreclosure eligible properties that I think historically have been carried over year to year with nothing done, and now we have a mechanism to investigate them, so we know if there's lead contamination, we know if there's asbestos, we know if there's oil seepage in the ground, and once we know those things, we'll have a much clearer picture as a county on the level of contamination, that there is contamination or not. And if there's not, it's good news, because then the county can go ahead with the foreclosure without the risk of liability.
If I can add that, these are foreclosure eligible, but not being foreclosed on, which means that they're not being used for anything right now. This is the necessary step in order to determine the pathway, if it's foreclosure, if it's additional cleanup led by the state or the federal government that's needed for those. That is all necessary before they're evaluated for their next use. Whether they're suitable for solar, whether they're suitable for their prime spots for community and development, et cetera. But right now, nothing can be done with them because there is this unknown quantity of the status, the environmental status of the properties.
I guess my reason for bringing this up is that, of course I care about brownfields remediation, but I also know that, for example, at the Government Operations Center, there isn't going to be an in-depth cleanup of the pesticides that are contaminating the soil, which is why it's ideal for solar, because it's not.
I would say in that point, they were able to get to that decision point with information with the DEC after engaging with the information and the data and the study. Okay. That's what brought them to that next point. So we're talking about getting up to those decision points as far as
asking that we keep that in the fore of our planning.
Another question. Now that we're moving money to different areas and making adjustments, is it related to the amount of contracts that we can execute every month? And now we can't execute the contracts by the end of the year?
I would say generally, yes. And in this circumstance, this is $750,000 in Ulster County to run the Brownfields program. We have two contracts currently, and we've also had an amendment that's already in previous months gone in front of the legislature. We've pushed those initial contracts are signed. We are even amending those contracts, so there's going to be an additional amount that will go into those contracts. But even despite all that work, and this really has to do with the fact that we've only contracted so far for phase one and some phase two work. So the dollar value of those contracts at this point is not high enough to obligate all the money. So just in broad terms, we have about $200,000 with the amendments that will happen that will be obligated, but that means that we are still left with the $500,000 that we cannot obligate by the end of the year. We have a number, we kind of have a list of properties, and we fully expect either new properties that are on the rolls and are in need of the service, or additional services that will be necessary based on what we find as we go on the existing properties.
Legislator Litz had a question, and then Legislator Stewart after that.
Yeah, I mean, Dennis came before this committee a couple of years ago or a year ago, and back when we had a piece of property, Kerhonkson or something, and we needed to do the work and whatever, and he said, there's a dozen, maybe two, properties that need pre-screening, that need to have some sort of, you know, determination whether they're brownfields or not, or if there's contamination and whatever. So it's not a lack of properties we have here, and it's not a lack of money. I mean, we're only spending $200 out of $750,000. Why aren't we taking those properties, pre-screening them? I mean, we could put out a dozen contracts to do the initial pre-screening on those properties, and then we'd know whether we can sell them or not, or whether we have to do a deeper dive and investigate.
Deputy Executive LaValle, would you like to respond directly?
I think, you know, again, these are foreclosure-eligible properties which have been severed from the judgment, right? So they are eligible, but for these questions, they're not, they haven't gone forward and the county has taken the ball. It's a time-intensive process. Each one of these has a phase one that has to be performed for the site. Each one of the phase ones that come back have a, you have to review all that data, and also then come up and prescribe exactly what the phase two scope of work is going to be, which includes the on-site testing, soil testing, water testing, etc. It's a lot of staff time, any one of these sites. Prior to this, we had done 2 to 3 of these through sites through a TIO. We've now bitten off a chunk that is, you know, what needed to be done, but it's a substantial workload, and it takes staff time to manage that, along with all the other demands on the department staff.
It takes that much staff time to put out an RFP to have preliminary studies done on a piece of property. Because we're 2 years into this.
So the phase ones have been done. So now what we're looking
for
at...
For all properties?
For 20...
I forget the exact number, but...
It's about 20 properties. Phase ones have been done. Two properties were deemed to not have any significant issues, and they've actually been included in this year's judgment. So they're kind of off the list. The rest of them all have phase two scopes of work. There are several properties that we've engaged directly with US EPA because they are significantly contaminated with a lot of junkyard brownfield use. And the thought is that, yes, there's going to be contamination there, so let's engage now with the targeted brownfield assessment program with US EPA to get them on site. That's a lot of back and forth as far as getting the EPA has to get their permissions, they have to get their information, we have to set up meetings with DEC. So there's somewhere close to 18 that I would say that are going into this the phase two site assessment work. Another reason to, again, kind of make the switch to lost revenue is that if we were sure that one round of phase two testing would be definitive for the sites, I think we would be more comfortable in kind of the time frames associated with spending the ARPA. But that's not likely to be the case, in which there might be additional testing and kind of additional work on the sites.
Okay, we've tested 18, and that's all of the properties?
So this is phase one, so that's like a site inspection, a visual site inspection, a review of records. Up to this point, we haven't done soil, air, water.
So why couldn't we bifurcate the list, take the ones that are junkyards and definitely contaminated, put them in that pile, take the rest, do phase two testing on them? We would have spent the ARPA money before the deadline. We would have more eligible properties possibly to put up for auction. But we got a few bad actors controlling our time frame, and then we we have to transfer $500,000 because we didn't do that.
So that has to go with, I think, a strategy question, and I'm going to, that part I think Nate could speak to as far as, is it better to like bifurcate the group, keep some of it in ARPA or not? So
if I may, Chair, on the question, Kristen Wilson, Deputy Director of Planning, is the project management for this, and she has provided, I know, Amanda and myself with breakdowns of and recommendations, and that is just an answer on as far as doing an analysis exactly like what you're talking about, mm-hmm. and we are getting to those points where we know some properties can go back and be foreclosed on, some properties will be, Amanda knows this best, we've been reaching out to different programs, whether it's at the federal or state level, where additional help is needed for dramatic cleanup. And then we have a bunch of properties in between, which we think will probably be phase two. And I think we're getting to those points as well. And I would have to call up Kristen Wilson or talk to her to know the day-to-day details. But I think we've done a lot substantially to get to that point, and I think that's exciting because things are happening and properties are moving in one direction or another. And then I think your other part of your question was just as far as the end of the year and the $500,000. And we want to make best use of the ARPA funds. We are constricted by time, and we are constricted by the obligation deadline by the end of this year, which has had additional guidance on what obligated is and what those restrictions are, which came out earlier in this year. And it made it very clear that an allocation of the legislature, for example, is not an obligation, which I think until that point was a little bit, was unclear. It's very clear now that it has to be a cost incurred. And the easiest way to explain it is it needs to be a signed contract. So with that in mind, we've moved quickly to preserve our funds by bringing it back to the county. The county incurred a loss to our government revenue in 2020, I believe it was, which we reported to U.S. Treasury, which in that year, being that it was the pandemic, there was a $14 million loss to the county. So the way that works is that that's all been reported to U.S. Treasury, and therefore, out of the $34 million of ARPA revenue we've received from U.S. Treasury, we are allowed to use this government service expenditure code and spend money through for government service. So we're basically, it's a quicker avenue, it's in a quicker expenditure code for use of these funds, which will make good use of it by the end of the year. Whereas
that's good for now. Thank you, Nate. Yeah. Thank you for that idea, Legislator. Legislator Stewart, I'll come right back.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Deputy Executive Laval answered most of my questions, but I just had a quick question for Director Nitwin. I was wondering if you could tell me, what is the total number of ARPA contracts that your office is working on? And also, if you could tell me how many of those contracts have been completed.
Yeah, I would actually please come to the ARPA meeting this Thursday, which I believe has been changed to 4:30 now.
Okay.
Because I will have, for each ARPA meeting, I do a handout usually, which has updated figures on how much has been obligated, which programs are obligated.
Right.
It's not broken down by contract as much, but mm-hmm. with it in front of me, I think I can answer better. Or knowing you're going to come, I'll just come prepared.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Did you want to add something, Lex?
No, I just wanted to say, Resolution 165 was passed April 19th, 2022, which is 2 years ago. And I can't believe that knowing these properties long before that date, that we could not have entered into phase two testing on a half a dozen or eight or nine of those 18 and not have to move the money around. And we would be closer to recapturing the monies that we've lost since they've been sitting off the tax.
So there are some legislators who think we should have done lost revenue right away, and apparently legislator Litz thinks we shouldn't do it now because we could ask the ARPA department and Department of Environment to do this work with the threat hanging over them from May until the end of the year that if they don't get these contracts in and signed, that they may lose this money. And this...
You missed my point.
May I?
Okay.
Thank you. And this notion that transferring funds is anything more than moving a pen from one side of the paper to the other and having 23 good people say that's a good idea, I mean, it takes longer to discuss this than it would have taken to make this change in allocation. It's just on paper. We still have the money. The only difference is I would call this the end of the year in the sense that the ARPA committee needs to know by, I think, June or July, which things are going to be obligated and which things aren't, so that that's no longer their focus. And so this is a clear one where by moving it into lost revenue, it says we certainly still want to do this, and now they don't have to worry about it. Now, the point that I take from Legislator Litz about, well, let's not just sit back and not get this done, I agree with that. But the reason that we don't have more done between 2022 and now is that we were still in the pandemic, and there's been a ton of stuff that has come in front of this body, both the legislature and the executive committee, that has been done in that time. And to have 20 different properties that have moved through this past phase one, I remember back when this program was first presented, we didn't have any of them done. And now we've had, you know, several of them move to a whole different category, either going back to be used for something or being remediated, or now this middle group. So I think when you decide that you need to cut this and move to treating it as a group that you don't want to have to be pressurized on your contracts is an executive function. And, you know, within a margin of error, I'm going to give them some slack. I want to make sure that we preserve all the ARPA money. Doing it in May seems like pretty reasonable to me. June, I think you better get all your decisions made. July, you're behind the curve. Because to move to a bid, a contractor, and a signed contract, I think can easily take us 6 months in this body. So if I'm the executive looking at that, I'm going, this little accounting maneuver allows me to get some of this done in January without risking losing the money. It just seems so patently desirable to me.
And I just want to add that I think there is an end goal here of continuing the Brownfields program. So I hope this body feels that there is value in the Brownfields program, because really the end goal is preserve ARPA funds, but continue the legislative, preserve the legislative intent, ensure that the project is funded.
One other thing is we've talked about having a chart or a ledger of the projects where we have moved them from ARPA into lost revenue. I hope that that's something that the ARPA committee is going to bring at each of its meetings so that we see where that money was taken from ARPA and that that's a chart of programs and projects that we still want to pursue and that we're making a commitment to as we make these changes.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Resolution 225. A motion to adopt the resolution as amended.
Did we vote on the amendment?
Yes, we did that before.
Okay. I move to adopt the resolution as amended.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Reluctantly, yes. Because my point was that this discussion should have happened a year and year and a half ago, and we wouldn't be moving money. We would be moving projects to completion. Thank you.
Resolution number 226, providing ARPA funding for county government services and replenishing funding for capital project number 674, the Ulster County Solar and EV Charging Infrastructure Program, ARP Division, Department of Finance, Division of Recovery and Resilience.
I'll move it.
This also has amendments.
I'll move the amendments.
Okay. And similar amendments.
Right. It's in the budget lines.
Great.
As presented.
So I have a motion to amend. Do I have a second?
Second.
Discussion on the amendments? All those in favor of the amendments?
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution adopted, or amendments adopted.
I'll make a motion to adopt the resolution as amended.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Green, all those in favor? Reluctantly also?
No, I was going to make a comment.
Okay.
We went to vote.
There's still time.
No, it's the same thing. Here's another program that we've been pushing the heck out of, building EV stations, and we're at the end of our funding line. I mean, it's really ironic in that we typically have so many programs that we want to fund, and we never have enough money to do it. We have the programs, now we have the money, and we don't marry the two and get them out on the street. I don't know, maybe we got too many EV stations, that's why we did it.
Resolution adopted. Now we're moving on to reports. Our first will be the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency Executive Director, Mark Ryder.
Thank you. So we had our board meeting last week, and we put through a handful of resolutions that had to do with personnel. So we currently have 4 vacancies at the agency. One is an administrative assistant in our recycling department. We have a coordinator of organizational management and development, which we will use to enhance our performance management as an organization, meeting our tasks in the local solid waste management plan. And that individual will also seek out, write grants, and administer grants. So it's a funding opportunity. We also have I talked about this last month, but the recycling compliance enforcement officer is out on the street. We've received a handful of resumes on that, but it's still open. And the board approved a full-time legal counsel. So that is another position. Anybody listening to this interested in applying for any of the positions can go to ucrra.org, and there's an employment section. Tells you how to do that. I have sent a handful of reports, what I've heard from this committee or other members of the legislature is that at one point in time, the UCRA was sending real data and numbers, and at some point it stopped. So these reports that I sent to Lizette are reports that go to our board every month, and as long as you find them helpful, we'll continue to send them. Goes through our recycling tonnage numbers, our hauling numbers, just our overall tonnage, and we do some, I think I sent you the leachate. So at both the town of Ulster and town of New Paltz, we pump and transport leachate. We're getting a lot of groundwater, especially in rainy seasons, so we're pumping a lot more leachate than we had been in the past, which has been quite expensive for the agency, so we're looking at other methods. We're going to be sending out an RFP for engineering services. One idea we have is connecting with the town of Ulster and just pumping the leachate right into their wastewater system. We need to do some testing to make sure that's okay, but you know, right now we pump it, we transport it in a truck, we send it to another wastewater system, essentially. So, and then in New Paltz, we're looking at potentially having an engineer design a retaining bond so that we're not having to pump it offside if we get approval from the DEC. Just looking to save money. I handed out at this meeting some diversion numbers. So these numbers, for the most part, are just diversion that's happening on the tipping floor. So somebody brings in clean wood, rubble, cardboard. I'm not talking about them bringing that to the MRF or our composting facility. That would be dumped by haulers and residents on the tipping floors, and our staff hand-picking it off the floor. You don't see that in a lot of the waste agencies. A lot of them aren't diverting things off the tipping floor. In most cases, they're just sending it to the landfill. As you can see here, there's quite a bit of numbers that are diverted. Yeah.
I know I saw the MRF yesterday on our tour, but can you tell everyone what MRF is
again? Yeah, sorry. And if I use any acronyms that people aren't aware of, I do want to invite, you know, this committee, and I talked to Terry Hewitt about maybe having one of these committee meetings at the agency and taking you all on a tour. But as you go into our facility, there's the main tipping floor where we collect the non-separated municipal solid waste, and that's typically what the haulers bring in. Our MRF, or our materials recovery facility, is where people bring dual stream recycling. So again, with flow control, recycling is not part of flow control. So really where we're getting that dual stream recycling is from the town, MRDC's material recovery drop centers. A lot of people call them transfer stations, but they're not, right? They're not the same. There's the two transfer stations that the agency runs, and then there's the MRDC's. So they collect the recycling, we pick it up, and it goes to our MRF, and then is sold into the market. So that's dual stream recycling. We also have our composting facility, which is separate, where we're bringing in the food waste. All the numbers here, except for in the 24-23 quarterly diversions numbers, that food waste number is the separated food waste we bring in. Up top, the food waste is food waste that, again, was diverted off the floor. So there was a time when some company brought in expired but still in the package food waste, and they were just going to drop it on our floor, and it was going to end up in a landfill. Instead, our staff depackaged it, brought it over to the composting section. We get fluorescent lights there. We get last year we did 3,211 Freon appliance units that, again, were not part of a diversion program where I know Sustainable Hudson Valley is doing one, I think, tomorrow, and several through the month of May at the New Paltz MRDC, which is a great thing. But these are just ones that people are bringing in the back of their trucks. They end up on the floor. We separate them. We contract with the company who will bleed them out, and then we recycle them, and it's all certified. So that was 3,211 units that was done. All these e-waste numbers, those are not e-waste that comes to our Saturday programs. That's, again, e-waste that's in the back of the hauler or pickup truck. So with the exception of the last three numbers, which are these 14 tons of dead deer, that, you know, that is part of our composting program. It doesn't go in our normal compost, but you all and the state contract through organizations like Pestmaster to pick up roadside deceased deer. They have to go somewhere. We have a composting program that's separate from our food waste. Wood chips is also something that is used on our composting program, and then sludge we take to another facility.
So you just, I'm just curious what you do with all these dead animals.
Yeah, we compost them.
Yeah, you just, okay.
Dump them.
High heat.
I was going to say that must be really high heat.
Lime and wood chips.
Okay.
Again, that's not added into
it's a totally
separate program. We're keeping
right.
it separate from food waste.
Use it on site, right?
Yeah.
Is that the, yeah.
Yes. But I mean, we're looking at other programs to get more involved, like, you know, we live in a very to some, you know, add concert to the county.
Right.
And so we're even like looking at experiments to like doing a program with Cornell to encourage farms to do more livestock composting. That kind of thing.
Well, I'm just flabbergasted that there's 13 tons or 12 tons of dead deer. That just seems shocking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Representative Green, did you have your hand up?
A reminder that
I think it's important that the agency work with, I think it's still the Department of Environment, with regard to food waste composting, education and enforcement. And I say education first, and I know that Department of Environment has been doing a lot of education, but our calculations were that when the program was fully implemented, which theoretically it should be now, it was phased in, so anyone generating more than half a ton should be composting, either doing it themselves or hiring a hauler and taking it to a facility. I think there's a lot of room for improvement, and I've said this before, but I think it's worth repeating. For example, a chamber breakfast or a chamber event where it's focused on food waste composting, because I think we're a far cry from the 10,000 tons a year we estimated was available from eligible or regulated generators.
Yeah, no, and I 100% agree with you. I've had conversations with Ward Todd about actually doing, you know, chamber events and having them separate their food waste. It was a lukewarm reception to that program. I mean, I think, you know, they contract with these different facilities, some of which would normally be regulated, and so I've also offered to have the agency come and do a presentation and do other things. So we're working through all that process. But the, you know, last week was a time too when I also brought it up with Worth. So that's the latest breakfast. But I know there's been attempts by the agency before I came on board.
Yeah, you demonstrated very beautifully how providing good information can really help people understand. And I think it's just phenomenal that you've had thousands, literally thousands each year, of Freon units that could have otherwise just gone into a landfill actually have that material taken and handled in such a way that it doesn't. It's one of the, you know, by far, one of the highest greenhouse gas generating substances, and the amount of materials that you've been able to rescue and put in compost in some way is just really wonderful. So I compliment the staff for doing that work and for you for bringing it to us. And I think the legislators should talk to Ward on, you know, behalf of having the chamber really look at its behaviors and certainly bring this message to the businesses, because for some of these businesses it may be a perfectly cost neutral type of approach. I don't know that it will save them money, but I don't think it's going to cost them much money, and the value to the community. We have a small operation started in just the past year out in Shandaken for compost being run by one of our farmers. And the farmer has benefited by having all kinds of fantastic fresh food waste on his farm. And so the program is growing, I'm happy to say. I think we should have some presentations about these innovators and have them really inspire others to make these transitions. So I appreciate your being, I know that you're a good advocate for that, and I'm just offering myself and others to help out with that. And let's make it a big push.
If I could just say Frost Valley YMCA, Mohonk, and SUNY New Paltz.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have really good examples, and I think that a focused conversation, and I wasn't so much saying, yes, it would be great if the chamber sets a good example, but more to showcase what is being done and what can be done, because in many ways we've taken leadership. A lot of our businesses get it and are acting upon it. But anyway, just those are some other examples.
Legislator Stewart?
Kind of along these same lines. So I was going to ask you if...
what the agency has planned as far as the Ulster County Fair this year?
Yeah, so at the last meeting of this agency, I ran into, you know, leadership at the Ag Society and just said I wanted to start up that conversation.
Right.
You know, what happened last year is unsustainable, which is basically the executive director was going around collecting it himself. I'll use this question in order to be able to segue in. It's not so much as what the agency is preparing to do. It's not, as I stated to you all at the last meeting, we're at our capacity as far as our permit, but the obligation is not on the agency to provide the Ag Society and the Ulster County Fair the ability to separate their food waste. It's on the Ag Society, who is a contracted vendor of the county, to put, and I'm happy to work with them, but I'd also be happier if they were to contract with an agency like Greenways, who has shown through the Garlic Festival that they are experts at the festival field. And I know that they have had conversations with leadership at the Ag Society and had a proposal put in front and essentially was, there's no agreement at this point, because I think it was a 2-year process that Greenways wanted to see. They wanted to handle the vendors first, and then year two would be a rollout, because there's a lot of legwork that in order to divert all of that, you have to get the vendors to buy the right compostable materials as far as utensils and plates, etc. They can't just go out and order anything. So the first year, I think, is a little bit of an education program with the fair and the vendors, and then year two would be really collecting everything. But happy to be a support to the Ag Society in any way.
So the 2-year program you're talking about, that's something that
Greenway is
proposed
to Ag Society.
Okay, great. And it's my understanding that the county is up to renew its contract with the Ag Society. I believe I heard that from a different committee.
Yep.
So perhaps the county should look into making that one of the stipulations of renewing that contract with the fairgrounds, that they need to put in place some sort of a recycling program with Greenway or a similar company.
Yes. Legislator Green?
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, I sent around a request to the Ag Society, the fair. I'm not sure, you would have been just newly on board, so I'm not sure if I burdened you with it, but the Climate Smart Committee has worked with the Ag Society for several years, and last year it didn't go well. It was not a good use of equipment. The composting stations were unsupervised, and it was a problem. But I think with good planning, and there's Greenway, there's Community Compost, there are others, and also the agency itself has support for public recycling at festivals, et cetera. So anyway, I sent that around, and I did not get a response. So maybe coming from another angle, I just want to include the Climate Smart Committee, because we have Climate Row, but we also can help get volunteers for collecting compost buckets, et cetera. I just want to say that 25 years ago, we were doing 72% waste diversion, including stations for public recycling. They do need to be, they need to have somebody stationed there. And Clearwater also achieves about 70% when they had their last two revivals, because they have a whole team of litter pickers.
Why don't we touch base offline? I'd be glad to, but I just want to be sure
that the Climate Smart Committee is included, because they have been active for the past, I think, 3 or 4 years.
I believe Director Ryder has somewhere to be after this. You have two more comments. Legislator Litz, you want to say something?
I actually canceled my... Okay.
No, I was just going to say that I've worked the Garlic Festival, volunteered the past couple of years, and I'll probably do it again this year. That system works pretty well, but you have to have volunteers at each station to divert it. If not, people are just throwing everything at one. And there's a lot of diversion going on informally that people don't understand. I take any right around between 8.5 and 10 ton a week diversion between 5 breweries, Herd's apple juice, Luigi's Deli. So there is that informal component that is going on that people don't see.
I think I'm wondering, and Detective LaValle may know, or Mark Ryder may know from prior days in purchasing, do we have, does county have a policy in terms of different levels of events, either policy or guidance for green purchasing and composting? We do have those policies for ourselves in our own purchasing, and I think they're good. So I'd like to think that maybe we could adapt them and have them as best practices, recommended practices, and the suggestion that some form of food waste diversion go into the contract for the use of the county fairgrounds for big events seems reasonable to me.
Seems reasonable to me.
And just a small point on the time frame of that, it's a perfect time to talk about, you know, what those required, you know, goals or requirements might look in that contract, but I believe it doesn't expire until the end of 25.
So I think it's 20, is it 25 or 26?
I just looked at it and I thought.
It's a 5-year contract, and I thought we were 2 years and it's only two more to go.
It's two more to go.
The building, and if we're talking about that, I think we can talk about other things as well.
I mean, I was here when the contract was, so that was just about 2 years ago, I remember. So I think it was a 5-year contract.
Did you have more?
I do, but just to answer Legislator Nolan's question, too. But the health department does give mass gathering permits. So if there was a policy that they had to abide by, right, that might be a way to enter.
If that is, you know, separately, there was. Now there's a statewide ban on styrofoam. There was a pot ban before the statewide ban from the county. There was a whole law, right, that was superseded, but it was specific to certain kinds of takeout. Yeah, that one did apply, for example, to vendors at the fairgrounds, and we had to, you know, ensure that that was also kind of mirrored in the permit, the agreement with the Ag Society, to make sure that they were aware of it and they were enforcing it too with their vendors. So there's a lot of kind of avenues and overlaps, I would say.
Make sure that everyone talks to each other at each step along the way.
So the last two updates will be really quick. This weekend in New Paltz, we had our first of our 4 hazardous household waste events. We served about 250 residents. We had 300 appointments, but between last minute cancellations and no shows, we typically lose about 50-ish. So 250 people came through there. Our next event is at our Town of Ulster site, June 23rd from 8 a.m. to noon. Registration for that event opens May 6th. So that's Monday. And again, appointments are available online. Just last update, wanted to kind of come back to some conversation that was on for last month. Last week I did meet with Josephine and Shabazz from Greenways. Did a tour of a couple of their facilities, plan on joining this committee on the tour for their main facility. We had a good meeting, talked about the Town of Hurley pilot program. I am working with the board. We're going to get the Town of Hurley a letter to just indicate to them that they would not be violating the agency contract or flow control to move forward with the pilot.
Wonderful. Thank you. Any questions for Director Ryder?
These aren't so much questions as just kind of adding to what Director Ryder said. We'll be hosting, I shouldn't say we, but Greenway will be hosting a tour of their facilities in New Paltz and in Clintondale on May 16th, starting at 2 o'clock in New Paltz. And members of this committee and also members of the UCRA Reform Committee, as well as Hurley Town Board and their CAC and Climate Smart Committee, we're also invited. Hopefully we'll have a good turnout for that. And also next month I'll be putting forth a resolution for the legislature to grant authority to the chair of the legislature to enter into a municipal agreement with the Town of Hurley a half of the $20,000 required with the Town of Hurley in the contract with Greenway for this 3-month pilot program.
Nice. And that's on the agenda coming up too, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Perfect. Okay.
So we'll transition, if everyone's okay, into the UCRRA Reform Committee.
We are still working on our report, and I thank Director Ryder for participating and also Jim Gordon. So that the agency is present as the issues are being raised. We've completed the section, at least discussing the section on waste diversion, and probably our next meeting will have a written draft to comment on. And we've also done some work. I don't feel like it's complete yet on waste disposal, but we have started to look at the contract, and March Gallagher is actually leading that section to see what things we might want to change in a contract that is 25 years old. And then the idea of the long-term fate of the agency. All of that is being discussed, and I feel like we're making progress. I do believe there's going to be a request for a 30-day extension, because it's not going to be ready by June 1st or even June 30th, but to take it through July to get the report to this committee.
Any questions? Thoughts? Great. Legislator Green, can you also go over the Renewable Energy Implementation Program and our progress?
Yes. I feel like that's one of the most important things that we're working on countywide. A working group was appointed, and we are in the process of doing a lot of research and developing a report. We've been
holding trainings for municipalities using the CenaCuts and solar mapping tool. Since 2021, we've trained over 150 people. I've created a spreadsheet, which I just need to tweak a little bit, and I'll share it with this committee. My request is that you look at the municipalities that you represent and see who's on that team and connect with them. So it has the supervisor, the legislators, and people who have taken the training or people who are willing to help. And if we do that, municipality by municipality, I believe we can achieve 70%. And we've also had a very productive meeting to coordinate with the executive branch, because it's a huge undertaking. But I really believe it's possible. We're in touch, active communication with the New York Power Authority over build public renewables, and how, basically, how NYPA can help our municipalities. And when you think about the municipalities in your district, think about what can be done at the municipal level, as the county is doing for buildings and property. Think about what can be done by the business sector and how to promote that. And we'll be providing information on incentives, and then also with your help identifying obstacles and figuring out how to overcome them. So it would be municipalities, businesses, and residents, those three levels. And we've also had, in addition to doing the trainings, and I believe we'll do one more shortly, we've had two forums. One, just to kind of explain the whole thing, but what came out of, and also explain benefits to municipalities from clean energy communities and climate smart communities, where, for example, I believe Marbletown is earning over $600,000 in credit in dollars from the credits that they earned. And then just recently we had a forum on 70% of what? How do I know what my municipality generates? So Tom Conrad crunched those numbers and is providing that. And I know that that's also happening with the Climate Action Plan greenhouse gas inventory. So we'll have that answered. But also to look at the queue, what has already been developed in your municipality. For example, in town of Ulster, the county has a very large array on the old landfill. And I recently met with the town of Ulster, and while we were meeting, the supervisor was looking at Google Earth to find solar projects. And you can see them on Google Earth. So we're asking municipalities to make an inventory of what's already been done and what's in the queue. And if it's in the queue and it seems stuck, why? Because that's how we will identify the obstacles and find solutions to overcome it. And everything I've just said, I will send you with the spreadsheet. I just need to clean up the spreadsheet a little bit.
Great, thank you. I think you touched upon the next item, which is understanding municipal energy loads.
Yes.
That would be great to be part of the spreadsheet, maybe, so we see where our town stands.
And that's what the volunteers can supply and fill in their report.
Oh, nice.
And then we'll put it into the spreadsheet, or if they want access, they can put it in directly.
Good.
I've started to do that for the towns I've been in direct communication with, and I just want to put in a plug, because the supervisor for the town of Ulster owns Van Cleek's Tires, and he has a large array on his roof. So he's walking the walk as well as talking the talk.
Great. Thank you, Legislator Green. Any questions, thoughts, additions before we move on to new business? And if anyone would like to leave, if you've done a report, feel free.
You looked at me.
Now we have Jasmine from Mid-Hudson Energy Transition for a little new business report.
Hello.
You can feel free to join us at the table if you'd like.
How y'all doing?
Good.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me here today. Okay.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I was telling Jasmine that Mid-Hudson Energy Transition was at our nonprofit restaurant today, tabling all day, spreading the word.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. So I'm Jasmine Graham. I'm the executive director of Mid-Hudson Energy Transition. We're based right here in Kingston on Wall Street. So I actually just walked over. It only took me like 3 minutes. I have a little presentation. It's not too much. I'm going to try to, you know, keep the time short, but want to introduce us. And so here's a look at our team. The top six folks are full-time. The bottom six are part-time. So we have rapidly grown. We were formed in 2021. Got our first full-time staff last year with Emily Morrow, our operations manager. And we are rapidly growing to make sure that the Mid-Hudson region is well positioned for an equitable and renewable energy transition. So our mission really focuses on empowering communities to own and share renewable energy, create healthier buildings, and join in community wealth building to strengthen the resilience of the Hudson Valley in the face of climate change. And our three programs are directly tied to our mission. Our core strategies are really, you know, we want to activate and build on existing community involvement and engagement. We want to organize and boost community capacity to make their own energy decisions, generate financing, and also always aligning our work with New York State's very ambitious climate goals. And so we have three key programs. The first is Kingston Community Energy. We are contracted with the city and our technical partners over at Power Market to administrate a community choice aggregation program. We are still waiting on our approval from the Public Service Commission. It's a lengthy process, but actually a little bit about my background is I previously managed the first and largest CCA in New York State over at Sustainable Westchester. That program was actually an aggregation of 27 municipalities. So, you know, once we get our administrator approval, starting with just Kingston should be no problem. But, you know, we're really looking to do CCA in a different way. We're really looking to go beyond just bulk purchasing renewable electricity, which is kind of what's standard for CCAs. And we're tying in all of these value-added services and voluntary opt-in programs. The first one that we've launched is Community Solar. So we do have an open offering right now in Kingston for anyone who's low income or attack information at the end. You can email us or you can check if you're eligible just by typing in New York disadvantaged communities and the map will pop up. The next program that we just launched, we actually closed our application deadline this past Saturday, April 27th, is our Home Upgrade Grant Program. This one is a combination of partnerships between us, local contractors, and income-eligible homeowners to improve the health and safety of their homes. I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then the third program that we have not yet launched but are gearing up to launch is our Home Energy Loan Program. So we're actually creating a nonprofit tiered green community investment fund that will allow us to provide low-income residents with extremely low-interest loans and small grants to finance the work that's needed to be done. A little bit of background on this is we went on a listening tour when we first started, when I was first hired, and what we heard from people is, yeah, this idea of building decarbonization is really nice, but I don't have the time, I don't have the skills, I don't know the contractors, and I don't have the money. And we said, okay, so if we project managed the whole thing for you and connected you to financing, would you do it? And people said, that's maybe the only scenario in which I would do it. And we said, okay, maybe we don't want to do that, but we will take on the challenge for you all. Just a little bit more about Kingston Community Energy. You know, as I said before, typically the program is really centered on the purchase of electricity, but we're going way beyond that with our building decarbonization project management support. Over time, we'll get into resiliency, electrification of transportation, and really importantly, this innovative financing mechanism. For us, we don't want to just get people a fixed rate on their electricity supply. We want community solar where people are actually getting a guaranteed discount on their bill. And we actually want to move to a place in which everyone has access to ownership opportunities, right? So how do we form cooperative models so that the folks who have typically been harmed by fossil fuel systems actually can reap the benefits of the clean energy transition? And it's not just passing folks by as, you know, a discount here or there, but how do you actually get a stake in the jobs, the wealth, the ownership, the property, all of those things? So it's an exciting trajectory, but as I said, we're still kind of on, I would say, phase two, because we're doing community solar, and we are exploring sites for community-owned solar. So we're looking at brownfields. I know that was a hot discussion today. We know that there are definitely opportunities to work with the existing brownfield sites. We're also looking at agrivoltaics options. How do we boost economic efforts for farmers to add solar to their, you know, the land that they already have, create a symbiotic system with the agriculture, and then also be able to offer people these kind of discounts and benefits.
I'm thrilled to hear that you're doing agrivoltaics. That is awesome.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly novel, at least in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
We've spoken with developers, and two of the folks on our team, Muncie Gupta and Connor Cantrell, have really led that effort. Colorado, Massachusetts, there's a lot of places where it is, you know, really booming. We're not seeing it as much here, and so we're hoping to kind of popularize this. And in my previous work, I worked mainly in Westchester County. I also worked in New York City for some time. You know, we have the luxury of space up here, and so we really should make it work for us.
Are you working with Communities for Local Power?
Yeah, absolutely. So CLP is doing a lot of great work. The rate case and fighting against the unfair utility rate spikes is one of the things. But they also are doing contractor training, which is really advantageous for our home upgrade grant program. Susan Gillespie is the president of our board, and we have a really close relationship with CLP.
And also workforce development and training?
Yeah, so we aren't directly working on workforce development, but we kind of partner with CLP to as kind of like a sister organization that is doing that. And we work oftentimes with similar contractors.
So if there are contractors developing a community solar project, for example, Point of Praise, that's a community solar where the congregation members essentially are part owners of the project, but CLP brought student interns to learn how to do solar installation.
Yeah.
So I'm just putting that on the radar.
Yeah.
If it's not already.
100%. And all of these kind of innovations that we're doing, I mean, they are new, right? And so agrivoltaics is a really great opportunity, you know, to actually not just learn how to build the systems, because they are different, they have to be higher, you know, depending on if you need to be able to get machinery under it, and, you know, you want to think about what crops can actually be productive. And we've talked to Cornell and some of the other universities so that we can bring in agricultural experts. So there's definitely a lot of opportunities for innovation, research, learning, workforce development, all of that kind of combined. And that's a good segue into the Home Upgrade Grant Program, because this is one where we have a really clear overlap with the work that CLP does. You know, the problem that we have here in Kingston, and the reason why I'm talking so much about Kingston, is because everything that we're doing is so novel. We're really showing proof of concept here first before we replicate it to other areas, but that is absolutely the intention. And so here in Kingston, just like most of the areas around, the housing stock is very old. More than 50% of the housing was built before 1939, and more than 89% was built before lead and asbestos was banned in 1980, I believe it was. So we have this incredibly old housing stock, inefficient, you know, water damage, mold issues, lead, asbestos. And for us, you know, there the clean energy transition is happening, and there's huge amounts of money that have been released. The Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund just, you know, the EPA just announced all $27 billion has been committed of the GGRF. They rolled out $20 billion on one side, $7 billion for Solar for All in particular. Huge amounts of money, huge incentives for folks. But in communities like ours, I'm not going to put a heat pump into somebody's home before they've done energy efficiency work, because it's going to increase the cost of their electricity so substantially that they're not going to, you know, be able to most likely make ends meet. We're already seeing, you know, here in Central Hudson Territory, that one in four people has utility debt. So I can't in good conscience put in a heat pump until someone's weatherized and efficient. But I can't weatherize someone's home and seal them in with environmental health hazards that they already have in their house. So if you've got mold, if you've got vermiculite, right, which is asbestos in your insulation, that has to be contained or remediated before we can even consider weatherizing your home. And so for us, you know, we know there's energy efficiency money that's through the state's Empower Plus program. There's electrification money coming down from Inflation Reduction Act. But there isn't that health, safety, you know, pre-efficiency dollars. And so we were able to get funding from a philanthropic institution to do a home upgrade grant program. And I have a whole other set of slides if you guys actually want to go into the details of that. But at the high level, we're going to provide grants to about 30 low-income homes here in Kingston, ranging between $5,000 and $20,000. So about 15 people will get a $5,000 grant, 10 will get a $10,000 grant, 5 of them will get a $20,000 grant, depending on what we find in their energy assessments. So we're going to apply through the Empower Plus program with NYSERDA. We're going to stack incentives. So we're going to help them with that pre-efficiency work. Then one, you know, they're approved through Empower Plus. They're able to get up to $10,000 in energy efficiency work through NYSERDA's Empower Plus program. And now they're at a place where the health and safety is taken care of, the energy efficiency is taken care of, and they're at that kind of starting point where they can now use IRA money.
And it's perfect that this is called the HUG program.
Yeah, because we're providing wraparound technical assistance. Yeah.
I had a couple of quick questions. One was, I was wondering if you could provide us with your slide presentation.
Of course.
That would be awesome. Two, I was wondering if you're working with landlords as well, the people in these homes.
So for this first iteration, we're doing homeowners. Mm-hmm. You know, for us, it's kind of twofold. One, when you bring in landlords, you really want to make sure that there isn't displacement, right? You don't want to give someone $20,000 of grant money and then they hike up the rent and the low-income tenant can no longer be in there. So we're looking at what are the legal mechanisms. And I know that Ulster County has a rental affordability program, and there is some measures in the lease about keeping rent relatively stable for like 5 to 7 years. Yeah. So we're looking at mechanisms like that. But for this one, because we're also kind of getting our sea legs under us in terms of the incentive stacking, we wanted to kind of not complicate it too much. So we're going to start out with those low-income homeowners.
Perfect. And also, I was wondering, how do you select the people whose homes will be used?
Yeah, so we put out an interest form for a month. We got 80 interest forms. So now we're going to get every single person an audit. So we just started calling people back this week. So all of those people are going to go through the state programs and Power Plus or the Comfort Homes Plus if they aren't income eligible. We'll help everyone get an audit no matter what. And then the results of that audit will help us kind of triage who's got the worst case scenario, who needs a $20,000 grant versus a 5 versus a 10. It's, you know, we didn't expect to get the turnout that we did, so it's probably going to be a much harder process. But we also have a community council that helps guide our work. So we've got representatives from For the Many and REPCO and Radio Kingston, CCE. I know I'm forgetting someone, and I hope they don't get mad at me when I'm listing this off. Joe McDowell, who's a contractor, and so we have community support to kind of help us not just design our programs, but make these tough decisions when they come up.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's literally the thing that differentiates us most from other CCAs is, you know, we're really centered on that community focus. You know, for me, I didn't grow up in Kingston. I grew up in Westchester. You know, I'm not going to pretend to know what people here need more than the people that have been here, right? And so by putting kind of community at the center, everything is built out in a way that is not just more equitable, but more accurately serves the issues and creating solutions that actually work for the people that live here.
Such exciting
progress. Thank you.
If you have the need for, if you have extra households, send them over to REPCO because REPCO has a very large ARPA grant, mm-hmm. and I think they only have 3 projects out of, they're supposed to do 10 okay. for the same, basically energy retrofit, but first an energy audit.
Right.
I'm not sure they do a health and safety audit.
Right.
And who does the energy audits? Is that something that your staff is trained to do, or do you use outside companies, or how does that work?
Yeah, we use an outside contractor. At this point, we've selected one contractor because of the amount of interest we've got. We know who we probably want our second contractor to be. These are folks that we've worked with before. We trust the work that they do, and they're certified through NYSERDA, so they're Empower Plus certified. In order to access that NYSERDA money, you have to use an Empower Plus certified contractor. It's a fairly easy process, so that in and of itself doesn't mean that you're getting the best person, but we've worked with some of these contractors before. So that's how we're doing that. And they, you know, I think for ease of the whole program, right, it's helpful to work with a few trusted sources. But yeah, 80 participants, we might have to.
And so there's 80 participants and there's 30 slots.
Yeah, and we haven't gone through the application process with each of them, so we haven't confirmed income eligibility. We're only focused on low income, so you have to be less than 80% AMI. But as I said, we'll help everyone get an audit. And REPCO actually did send us a few applicants along with Ulster County Community Action Council. Yeah, people who have been deferred from the Empower or the WAP programs before, you know, they've actually had instances where contractors have said, I'm not going into that house because there's mold in it. And so there's folks who are still waiting on an audit because they haven't had the health and safety, you know, remediation first. Our contractor said, we'll go in no matter what. If someone else has to live there, the least we can do is go in and assess the problem. Mm-hmm. We actually got referrals from folks that have been deferred from those other programs. We're also very lucky to have received an ARPA grant ourselves from the City of Kingston, and so this is kind of the first iteration. The next step is to roll out a kind of broader energy efficiency campaign with lower grant amounts but hitting more people.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again. I'm sorry, what is the name of your company?
Yeah, Mid-Hudson Energy Transition.
And at the end, you could just share your contact info in case anyone has additional questions.
Yeah, I've got cards as well. So, and our website is mid-hudson.energy.
Great. And do you have additional slides?
Yeah, I'll run through them very quick. So the third program that we will be launching is our Home Energy Loan Program.
Another right? great acronym.
Yes, HELP. I know. I will say this one I came up with. The HELP Fund will be combining different types of investments from philanthropic partners, impact investors, and non-accredited investors. So everyday folks can invest in this fund, get a return on investment, and the money that is raised can be used to provide extremely low interest loans and small grants. So we're actually looking at a 2% interest loan for low-income folks, again, starting in Kingston, but hoping to go wider than that. these, we're able to do this through a philanthropic interest rate buy-down, and these will be unsecured loans that don't have credit requirements, will not have a second lien on your home. We're lucky to use state programs from NYSERDA, like a loan loss reserve. So this is really innovative, really new. Hopefully we will be the poster child for NYSERDA, because you know, we know that especially when it comes to Kingston and other areas in the Hudson Valley that are experiencing, you know, a lot of folks moving in, a lot of folks can't take on additional debt. And so if you're asking someone to take out debt, at the very least, it's got to be extremely low interest. So that's the HELP program. And there we go. So you can follow us on social media, Mid Hudson Energy everywhere. That's our website. That's the general office number, but I'll give you all my card as I leave. And that's a QR code that does take you to the donate page. So feel free to support our work and share it with others, because I think we're doing pretty good things.
Wonderful. Very exciting. We have a huge following watching right now, so they can scan the QR code and go.
Yes, and I'll hand them out as I.
Thank you. And this was introductory, so we hope to work with you a lot.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, if you ever have, you know, any kind of questions, of course, reach out. But also, as you're designing programs and need help, energy assistance, we just have a lot of brilliance on staff, so we're happy to be a sounding board.
Wonderful. We have a couple more minutes if anyone.
Right now, it's only residents, not businesses, because I know a couple of nonprofits that are trying to go this route.
Correct, and we do foresee opening it up in that way too.
There is a
fairly new nonprofit program, nonprofit grant program. There were about, I think, 10 organizations, maybe nationally, that got selected for this. Sustainable Westchester, where I used to work, was actually selected as one. So if you do have any nonprofits that are looking for grants, particularly for these types of upgrades to make their buildings energy efficient, I would definitely reach out to the folks at Sustainable Westchester.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anything to add? Thank you, Jasmine.
Really great presentation.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank
you.
It was very nice.
Thank you all so much. Really appreciate your time.
Mm-hmm. I think the next agenda item, new business, I might remove. It's Central Hudson Rate Hike Memorializing Resolution. I put it on because of the rate hikes and how we should, as a committee, care about this. But Jen Metzger just had a press conference. There's a lot happening. So I'm thinking of moving
defer on. Defer it for now.
Defer it, if everyone's okay with that. Thank you. Feel free to follow up with me if you want to discuss it more. Eric, can you tell us about the zero waste in Hurley, please?
It's basically, I kind of touched on this already. The town of Hurley has signed a contract with Greenway Environmental Services to remove up to 90% of organic wastes from their waste stream. That's their goal. It's a 3-month pilot program. For that, the price tag with Greenway is $20,000. And since we view this as a potential pilot program that can be duplicated in other municipalities around the county, I thought it was a good idea for the county to assist the town of Hurley with that project. And as I mentioned earlier, the county will be kicking in $10,000 to that effect, assuming the legislature grants Chair Criswell the authority to do so.
Thank you.
Through an intermunicipal agreement. So,
wonderful. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Legislator Stewart. Any questions or thoughts?
Awesome.
Legislator Green, did we discuss the public comment for PSC opposing changes? Do you want to go over that?
I just think it's really unfortunate at a time when this is just catching on. Our municipalities can really benefit. I don't know, is there a memorializing resolution or?
No, I don't think so. I
you
think
could start a letter.
A sign-on letter?
Yeah.
Okay. I can find out if there is a pattern that we can follow.
Okay, great.
I'll do that.
We'll talk soon about that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, I added Catskill Mountain Railroad engine update because I got a press release from the Catskill Mountain Railroad that was sent to the Department of Public Works talking about their goals for switching to biodiesel, for using certain filters, and then they also talked about getting a multi-million dollar garage to install the filters. But I got a good update today. I think I'll share the update. Mr. Hunt wasn't able to be here, so he sent me an update. He said that the Catskill Mountain Railroad has now switched to 100% biodiesel in both their locomotives, which reduces particulates by at least half. They've also started air quality monitoring, which they said they would do. And he has shared this information with Brendan Masterson at the Department of Public Works. And I think that is a very exciting piece of progress, biodiesel in both engines. I did have an idea, and I wrote it down. Maybe I'll follow up with Jasmine. They were talking about she was talking about electrification of transportation in her proposal. So I'd like to introduce her to the Catskill Mountain Railroad.
And I have the hope that they will be one of the first solar-powered tourist railroads because there is space. And I think with some of the money coming down from the federal government, they might be able to do that. And they did offer a tour. And I have a better sense now of where the location of the trail and the rail would be at the far end, which I think it's important to see it. Were you on the tour?
Yes.
Yeah. Until you see it with your own eyes, you're imagining it. But I thought that was really helpful.
The one part we didn't see was like the 1.8 mile bit that's in question still.
Yeah, and if you'd like to discuss that, it's a different committee. there are two more items on the agenda. Anyone else want to talk about the biodiesel? Okay, thank you. Legislator Roberts brought this idea of a 24-hour recycling center to us because it is effective in other municipalities. I spoke to Director Ryder about it. He thinks it's a good idea. It's not something that Legislator Roberts thought that we should hand to the RRA, and so we can discuss how to make progress, but Legislator Roberts couldn't be here. He said, feel free to discuss it today, and he can help make progress in the future.
I think it's a good idea. I would suggest that the first step would be to reach out probably to New Paltz, and if somebody thinks there's other recycling center that is comparable in its services, but they're doing the most that I know of. So go to them and find out what it would take to get them to be able to be open 24 hours, and I think that would give us a rough idea of what's involved in all of this.
Nice.
And maybe even have them come and present to us about what they're already doing and how much of a change this would be.
Beautiful. Just so you know, it's not staffed, the proposal that he showed us. It's holes that you put your recycling into.
So like the outside of a grocery store where you have return bins for the aluminum cans.
Right, but I think you have a great point. I'll work with Legislator Roberts to reach out to New Paltz because it could be housed there.
Maybe that would be a pilot program at their site. And they could also help us, you know, create a list of other places that might have sufficient space for whatever size containers we think could be made available. And then we can start pricing what those are, and maybe we can put five containers at five locations.
Cool.
Is this something that somebody on the recycling oversight committee could handle, or do we want to ask the UCRRA if they have capacity? Who could we're a committee, so it's hard for us to do the implementation. You know, we can do the research.
Good point.
But then we ought to be looking for somebody who could take this on.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's New Paltz, you know, doing it one stop at a time.
another meeting across the hall.
Oh, I thought it was going to be in here.
Oh, I thought it was going to be in here, too.
Yeah, because I have that meeting.
It says legislative chamber, sixth floor.
I think there was a note
saying
that that was wrong for this committee.
Let me see if they're wrong, because I haven't seen them milling around here. Like
I saw a couple milling around, but if you don't have a quorum, just let us know.
Well, I just think it's awesome the minority leader has expressed an interest in this and is willing to work on it. So kudos to Kevin.
Yep. I also like that his approach was don't give it to the RRA, but it's a way for us to think of how else we can implement something like this
in-house.
Yeah.
In the meantime, though, the Reuse Innovation Center, which could be the place where I like the New Pulse idea, but, you know, we're just not making progress on that yet. And, if I might, if we can get a couple of things like this that are happening at New Pulse but really aren't their thing or not only their thing, then I think it gives weight to the Reuse Innovation Center as a place where you bring either what's already happening there or duplicate it.
So perhaps this could be like a pilot program for the reuse.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. We have.
It's a different animal.
It's a different animal.
Okay. But thank you. I am going to drop the last item because Legislator Roberts said it's not important at this time. It's the RAPID Act.
Yeah.
It's really changing the authority of who handles these large energy projects.
Who handles what?
Large energy products at the state level. Isn't it RAPID? Because the governor is behind it.
Yes, you're right.
All right. I think anything else before we... Adjourn?
I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Perfect timing.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. All right.
Thank you.